The following podcast on the WDKX Podcast Network is
provided by Vision Automotive.
Welcome, Rochester, to our 13th episode of Let's Get Lit. We are so excited to have some amazing guests in the studio with us today. Today's episode title is Let's Get Lit, The Power of Healing Words. For those who are listening for the first time, LIT stands for Liberating Individuals Through Literary Text. We are so, so excited because we know that literacy is our greatest social justice issue of our time, and it's time for us to bring some real attention to literacy. And today we're going to talk about how literacy can be both healing and it can be one that is filled with power. So we're going to begin our interviews the same way we do each time we come together. We first want to allow you all to introduce yourselves and then tell us when you fell in love with literacy.
Greetings, world. How are you? I'm Naima Nateri, and I fell in love with literacy in my early youth. I would say my formative years of 5 years old, from and through music, which was introduced to me from my father and grandfather and my grandparents. Passing the mic.
My name is Chris Turner. I fell in love as well with music, the words in music and the tonality. As a little boy, I used to run around singing stuff I didn't even understand.
I'm Jerry Taylor. I fell in love with reading in Sunday school.
All right. Hey.
Hello, my name is Minister Florence. Pardon me. I fell in love with the literacy because I'm involved in ministry.
And my name is Cleonda Florence. And when I think about literacy and when I fell in love with it, I came to love it through a very different route. And it was through the power of words and seeing and hearing people advocate and going to marches and being able to watch my father and grandfather speak with people and allow them to see the importance of who and what their lived experiences can do. And from there, I had some amazing teachers that inspired us through poetry. And when I began to see the importance of being able to write down my experiences and for people to be able to understand that, I began to love the importance of being able to write your words down, because that can never go away. So we are going to begin our discussion about the power of the healing word. And all of you all have a very diverse background. You have a background with ministry. You have a background with education. We have some doctors in the building, Dr. Taylor. We have some preachers, which all of you all are, and there's healing through that word. But you all also advocate within the communities in which you serve. And we're going to ask you all to talk about why is it important to bring about a healing word, especially in today's society?
I think words, they're like capsules. They contain within them either medicine or poison. Mm-hmm. Words contain the spirit of the person who is speaking those words. There's a place in the ancient writings that says, my words are spirit. Mm-hmm. And so if we deposit toxic words in the ears of our children, those toxic words, they have the capacity to murder the soul of a child, pull the curtain down on hope, to where it creates a blight inside of their inner being. And so I grew up with the stepdad. When I was young, he used some hostile words towards me as a child. Mm-hmm. and I'm grateful that he grew out of that. But I know that those words lived with me into my adult years, and they had the same effect that appeal would have, that has the capacity for sustained release. Mm. In other words, it is not fully unloaded or exposed in your system at the time. It can remain with you and continue to release its content over the period of even a lifetime. Mm. And so even at the age I am now, I still have to do in-course correction in light of the programming that came from my stepfather, who had a third grade education, who could not read or write, and did not know at the time, he did not know at the time, neither did I, the powerful impact that his words that he was speaking over me was having on my life and would continue to have on my life even as an adult.
Next. Thank you for sharing that.
Yes.
That was very, very rich. I think often we're faced with the challenge of appropriate words for the times. Mm-hmm. And one of the needed words that we really need to make common in our vernacular is looking at the pain of racism. Mm-hmm. This should not be an unsettling word. It should be a word that would cause the consciousness of the world to think of a people who have been marginalized and oppressed, and now we have an opportunity to change the plight of black people in particular. And I think it's very important that we need to get lit and fired up about getting beyond our barriers with words that we know can be liberating. Mm-hmm. And I hope that in our discussion and also in our igniting the fire of words, no matter how we try to dodge and step around this word is one that we must pass on to present and future generations, because the world is changing as we speak. Mm-hmm. And we need to be aware that unless the plight of black people in particular to overcome the oppression of racism, we will have a lopsided world.
As Dr. Taylor said, words have life.
Yeah.
They convey thought. One of the Bible writers wrote, "Keep your heart or your mind with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life."
Mm-hmm.
And when we speak words, we convey light, thought patterns from which other people may process these thoughts. And we can get the desired effect with the correct word, if we use correct words, or words that would build instead of tear down. We will have a more powerful world. Let's do this. You all came from a bunch of slaves. Mm. That does something to the spirit.
Mm.
But in the same thought and looking at the same people, I could also say, you all came from the strongest people. A whole lot of people didn't make the middle passage. You're the children of the most powerful folk, and you're still here. There's nothing that can stop you. Same thing.
Yeah. But now
those words give you a different
lift.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then me singing, there's something about music that you set words to. I need to hush.
Well, you're going to sing something then. If the word is not going to song, you're going to have to give us a song too.
It's almost like when in the height of the civil rights era, mm-hmm. they said a lot of things to music,
mm-hmm.
and they took where our spirit was from the church.
Yeah.
Some of those songs used to be amen, it ain't amen, now it's freedom, 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 freedom. You know what? I ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. That's the word. Turn me around. No, turn me around. Oh, ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. I'm gonna
keep on walking.
I'm gonna
keep on talking.
Oh,
freedom's
road. Yeah, yeah. There's just something about those words that get into the soul, into the heart, into the mind, and then your world changes.
Yes.
And so words and literacy can take you to another place, take you to another place in your own spirit, so your actions can be better and more beneficial. Mm-hmm. And then we have to learn to, like Dot said, watch our words, or watch the words that we say, because someone's picking those up. Mm-hmm. And we want them to actually build instead of tear down. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. This is Naima. Right on, brother, with what you just said. But I'm conflicted now. I'm a young educator, I'm an urban educator. And words tend to just fly out of young people's mouths without them even thinking about what they even mean, right? Mm-hmm. The words that come out of the radios these days that are putting batteries in our kids' back to think and act and feel certain ways, that's troubling to me. Mm-hmm. And as a woman, I'm also kind of fed up with words. I'm more about that action now, you know? So I'm kind of tormented with this whole topic of words and like how they move us, how they can like pin us down, how they can make us still, how they can make us freeze, how they can draw us into action, you know? So I'm swirling with thoughts around me from all three of your commentaries about the power of words and what they can do and how they can actually like bring social change and hinder progress.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Know?
Yeah. Very true.
And I'm just caught in the whirlwind of all of this right now, just with my work and the mission and vision that I have personally for young people to see themselves as more than enough, worthy, you know. And with the messaging that's coming through these sound waves now, it's just like it's a uphill battle. Mm-hmm. But I'm here for it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm about that action, like I said earlier. It's just woo cha. Cleonda.
And before we pass it to Dr. Taylor, I want us to center ourselves in a thought that Bell Hooks talks about in her book, All About Love. Mm-hmm. And she looked at how do we view love, and you're looking at the power of a word. So now we're going to move from words to a word. She said, if we look at love only through the lens of it being a noun, people, places, and things, versus what it was supposed to be, which is a verb. Now that word is supposed to evoke an action, but the question is, what have you been cultivating to determine the action? Because love, and all three of these men could talk about the different forms of love. See, if you don't know what form I'm using, my actions will show you something, but is it mania? Is it something that's very crazy? Is it masked? Is it a love that's agapeo? Something that we say that we want to acquire, and we have that long, you know, that long journey. But something she said in her book that was very interesting to me, she talked about the wounded child in love. You're a grown person, but there is some wounding that has happened in your childhood, and now your action of the verb love is now couched in the wounded child that you carry, but you're a grown person. So that is a very big topic when we talk about healing, words, action.
Yeah, I think if we go back to the word vocabulary, vocabulary is having the capacity to define your emotions, to define your thoughts. And if you have a limited vocabulary, you have a limited ability to define your inner state of being. Without a vocabulary, you cannot even discover your volition. And without a vocabulary, you cannot even have the words to discover your vocation. And that's why Africans were brought here, not as minds, but as hands.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
And in Tennessee, I worked on the farm, and I was called not a farm man, but a farm hand.
Yes, sir.
And so in order to for the oppressor to have control of your hands and to make you do what they tell your hands to do, they have to first destroy your mind. And the way you destroy a mind is to rob it of a vocabulary to where it cannot think for itself. And so I think that's where we are now. I'm thinking of my stepdad who had a third grade education. He brought words home to me in our house that he had gotten from the white sharecroppers. They'd been calling him everything but a child of God. And he brought those words and used them around me, and I picked them up. It became a part of my vocabulary. But they were not designed to give me life. They were somehow expressions of the anger and the hostility that he felt. And that was kind of transported into me. So I think today our children, our youth, must have uncles and aunts and parents and grandparents that will have a renewed appreciation for the expansion of vocabulary. Because if a child cannot learn how to fight with words, they will fight with their fist. And so that, I think that's where we would bring the vocabulary into connection with vocation, because if I don't have a vocabulary, I can't even think. And if you got me pressed down and me viewing myself as being less than, if I don't have a vocabulary, I can't even think my way out of that into a state of liberation, into a state of freedom. And so, and I think that's why there was such a push to get white hands wrapped around the black minds of our children. And whosoever hands are around the minds of our children, they have access and control over the future black intelligence in this country. And so I think that's where we are. Even with the music, you can tell the quality of the soul by the lyrics that come out of that soul. And I think we have in a sense lost our souls.
Absolutely.
You know, we went from spirituals. We went to rhythm and blues. We went to soul. And now we went. We've gone to the hip. We've gone from that inner being of spirit now to the physical part, and all we can talk about now in our vocabulary is the physical anatomy. We don't have any words that can speak to the spirit and the soul, because we have not been hanging out there with the kind of vocabulary that we need to take us deeper into that divine life that exists in us that is yet to be discovered by many of our youth and many of our people.
You said a whole word.
Right.
Thank you for that.
I was just talking to my children about the music of, you know, our parents' time and my grandparents' time, and how all the songs that we listened to growing up was about love. It was about love and staying together and working things out and seeing things through and promising each other that you'll be together forever. You know, just those messages, just, you know, repeated. And you saw it in the families. We were together, you know, at Big Mama's house, and we would just share ideas and share knowledge and wisdom that was passed through the word of intergenerational loving on each other. Now it seems like everyone has their own earbuds in. Everyone's compartmentalized with their own agendas, their own words being, you know, sped into their minds. And there's no communication anymore. There's no eye contact. There's no being together. And it's not, you know, you really can't really listen to what people have to say if they on for too long. The words just, you know, they just drown them out. And so what I see in the classroom and with youth, I am concerned. I keep bringing up my concern because, like, how do we remedy that? Remedy that, you know, in terms of solutions, like immediate, quick, you know, we need to expedite the medicine, know, like. Like we did the COVID vaccine. You know, just get it out there quick, you know, emergency, because we need on life support.
You know, Dr. Taylor talked about the value of vocabulary. I'd like to throw a word out and have us all think of, we heard the word love, but there's a interesting word, it may be familiar to us, but it's the word perfidious. We've become, as a world, very unfaithful to truth. And when words are just being spewed around and they're not based upon truth and facts, I thought Chris and Dr. Taylor just made that more personified because of our electronics that plug into so much information that is not always substantiated. You know, you see something on your phone, you see something on your iPad. If you are not one who sees the value of words, you can just run with a partial story and later on, no pun intended, but it ends up being fake news. But it's a challenge that we must return to the faithfulness of the value of not only how words are used, but Jesus was the best one to remind us about the truth. And he said, if you know the truth will make you free. And then if your history has been buried, if it's been unappreciated, if it's constantly being refashioned by those who have oppressed us since day one, we need to, as a people, to become more faithful to the truth. And of course, we as preachers understand that since COVID, there has been a reorganizing of how people feel about those things that are spiritual and those things that are wholesome, especially when it comes to the Word of God and the value of fellowship in church. Everybody wants to be away from each other. They want to be on Zoom and they want to be on TikTok and every other medium. But the truth is that God wants us to have personal contact. And he wants us to feel each other's hurts and rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those. You can't do that through a computer or through some kind of medium that isolates us. So I really think if we can return to the faithfulness, because we have become unfaithful on a lot of things, and one of them that's really close to me is that we're just not being truthful anymore when it comes to the history of our people. And we can't blame white folk for this alone, because even black folk who have been enlightened about their own history are treating it as it's theirs alone, when it is a global change that we need to see. And then also, I just want to put a challenge out there, because the problem with white pathology in terms of their words sometimes want to make our people feel down and worthless. But I really would like to say today, when we think about being lit with literacy and words, is that the most understudied people in all the world is white people. They have studied all of us to the T. But we need some words that will drive them to look at themselves and look at the words that they continue to use since day one to oppress every other ethnic group in the world. But we saw it on January 6th. There was no one from their community that said, we as a people need to get together and talk about what's wrong with us. And I think that we need to encourage not only to get our history out, but to get them to face the mishistory that they continue to spew because they don't want to deal with the facts. They don't want to deal with the truth that institutional, structural, and individual racism was created to put them ahead of everyone else. And if that doesn't change, our world is going to be in serious trouble.
I would recommend some books because what you just said. There's a book called Yorugu by Marimba Ani, Dr. Marimba Ani. And this other one is loading right now. It's called The Iceman Inheritance. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I have these books in my home. You just made me think about, oh, yeah, no, there's been some critical study and research on the mindset and the pathology of white supremacy and what causes that, what has that, what have us all living through it today in this system of white supremacy. So I appreciate that, bringing that up.
You're going to return the books that I...
No, these are my books. Oh. these are mine. But the author's name, I want to just make sure I have that fact. John Hendrick Clark.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
Dr. John Hendrick Clark.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was certainly a sharp brother.
Yes.
So much so that a certain governor says, I see no educational value whatsoever in learning the history of African Americans in this country, and want to take that out of the school system or the schools of higher learning in the southern state that looks like a panhandle. I'm not calling any names. Oh my goodness! When you go to another place or another country and you hear other people talk about your history or your country's history and from another perspective, the epiphany kicks in or a light turns on. We don't see you all. I'm in South Africa. Mm-hmm. We don't see you all as what you see yourselves as. We see you as a rebel colony. All of the things that you had had made in Britain on it, and all of a sudden you said, this is our country. Mm. You know, so I thought about that. I said, wow. And of course I expanded it. Well, where's our part? Where's my part in
Absolutely.
That? And so what you say about me may not be true either. Mm-hmm. I learned all about Chaucer, and I learned about the Canterbury Tales. I learned about the Knights of the Round Table. I learned about the Ming Dynasty. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Clark said, how did I get here? Mm-hmm. I watched Happy Days. I said, I know there had to be one of us in that city somewhere. Mm-hmm. They didn't pass anybody at the red light or on the street. I used to love those movies. I watched The Dukes of Hazzard. Nobody lives down there.
Happy Days.
Where did we come from? And then when you actually look at our history, it's rich. Yes. As a people, it's rich, even in this country. And I could go way far beyond that. It is rich, and we are literally connected globally. And I think other people realize that. And a great fear today is that we will recognize that as a people. I remember when Mr. Reagan was president, he refused to let a certain amount of money come in to this country because Mr. Gaddafi had granted the money. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But he'll put it into this country. He'll put it into this system. They'll buy and sell products. So it will help our economy. I don't like that person. Right. Yeah, really, I don't want you connecting.
Yeah.
Because if the world gets smaller, you won't believe that you're only 12 or 13% of the population. You're the global majority.
That's right.
And if you hook to the global majority, where do I fit in? Now I'm the minority.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I can't build a wall around the world. Let me just quit right there.
All right.
That hurt.
Let me just correct myself. So The Iceman Inheritance was written by Michael Bradley, and it's The Iceman Inheritance, Prehistoric Sources of Western Man's Racism, Sexism, and Aggression. Then we have Yorugu, an African-centered critique of European cultural thought and behavior by Marimba Ani. And then we also have The ISIS Papers, written by Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. Those three works for me were pivotal works in studying the psychology and the psychosis of the white man in this supremacy. I mean, there are books out there, but they're not
curriculum.
The curriculum.
Or the canon.
The canon, that's what
you know, the canon. And, you know, it aligns back to something that you all said, and it comes back to the village. And if you look at even what Jesus did, he always wanted to bring healing to the village, whatever that village of people as a collective is. The question is, what happens when the village is not healed, healthy, or whole? We say the African proverb, it takes a village to raise a child. The village is supposed to bring healing. The village is supposed to bring guidance. The village is supposed to order, bring some ordering to the steps. But the question is, when you have the older who should be teaching the younger, but they want to be younger, nobody wants to take on the crown of that knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. No one wants to take that garb and wear it in the appropriate manner. So now we're struggling because who then is the village? And that is what we are struggling with right now when we talk about healing, because the village has been redefined and redistributed and reconfigured because we have a lot of people who know a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But then when it comes to transforming beyond the me, my, and I, and really going to that macro perspective, when I eat, you eat, we eat, there's a difference. You saw a difference. You know, you acting a fool, I'ma tell your grandmother gonna talk to your teacher knows the person that works at such and such place. There was a connection, a connectivity with community schools in the community. Now we've got to redefine community and the village at the same time, and spiritual development, because we moved away from the church as far as giving us the moral foundation. Who is teaching that?
And a lot of times the church was the center for educational foundation as well.
Absolutely.
They doubled as school, and some of them had the same teachers. Some are still alive that I would sit and talk with. I just missed it, but some of my older friends were a part of segregated schools. That's one of my old teachers. We had to teach them not only reading, writing, and arithmetic. Mm-hmm. We had to teach them this, and we had to teach them that. Oh, that's why all of them started businesses. My neighbor had he got off work, he went to the other thing, and then daddy would go off work, and then he'd go to work over here on this thing. They taught all kinds of things that, for lack of a better term, other folk weren't allowed to teach us when we got together. And for a long time, we were told things that really couldn't happen in our community. Mm-hmm. And so we grew up believing that, and then we got hit in the face once we got out of school. Oh, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. Or we won't allow you to. Of course you can. Of course you're qualified. Of course your grades were better than the people that we let in. You didn't make C's, you made A's and B's, but the D and F student got the position because that's my nephew.
Right.
And so that's when it becomes systematic that people act like they don't want to talk about today. It is a thought that needs to be studied. It is a thought that needs to be taught, because if you don't know anything about it, you can't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a part of the village, to know the village would, hey, don't do that. You don't have any home training? What's home training?
Right.
What's home?
That part, yeah. The idea of the village, we go back to Africa, and that was the first location of white exploitation, was the village. And you took babies out of the arms of their mothers and snatched them from the villages in Africa. And you brought them here, and you made it against the law for them to learn how to read and write, because really they didn't believe that we had the human intelligence to learn how to read or write or even to speak. And so it was no threat later on to let us learn how to read a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it was when we started reading a lot, Frederick Douglass, that it was discovered that we have a native intelligence that, if it was unhindered, would become competitive to that of the oppressor.
Oh, yes.
And it became evident when that slave village was raped of its human beings, brought here, and turned from a village to a plantation. And you keeping them from learning how to learn this language of the oppressor, so that they can then study the oppressor and study themselves and study their way out of that enslavement. And they did that to the point to where a study was done about two nations that had now come to inhabit the United States. One was black, one was white.
Kerner Commission.
And yes, and then you saw the black nation becoming more competitive than the white nation. Mm-hmm. So what do? Well, you can't beat them, you make them join you. Mm-hmm. So you remove segregation. Because it was in segregation that we produced some of the most brilliant minds that we've ever produced. And those minds remain connected to the best interest of their people.
Oh, yes.
So you bust that up in the name of integration, but your agenda was disintegration of that community to tell us, come on and be with us.
Come spend your money with us.
And now that we are over here, you have destroyed what was making us whole.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, was giving us discipline and the things that you all were talking about earlier. Now, where do we turn to? That's been kicked over like an anthill. And now they're telling us, pull yourselves up by your own bootstraps. Well, we were doing that. You took the bootstraps and the boots too.
And the boots.
And condemned us. And so I think we're going to have to go back to the Underground Railroad. Mm-hmm. In terms of getting together and thinking and planning and strategizing, not for a program, but for a 20-year strategic plan as African Americans, because we're at a point now where the message has been sent that they no longer consider us to be a part of the American people.
That's
right. So if that is the case, what are we going to do to organize ourselves as a community according to a 20-year vision, and work that implementally. You know, every 5 years, we have some things that we're striving for. I think we're going to have to take that route, because not that we have a choice now. They have taken the choice from us. This is an urgent need.
And this is so powerful. And every time we get to this point where things are at the place where we want to go, we got our prophetic eyes over here telling us to wrap that thing called up. So we want to thank our guests for just coming in and being a part of this and being a part of this conversation today. And we talked about the power of the healing words, and we're going to close out at this time. And again, we want to encourage everyone to understand that literacy is our greatest social justice issue of our time. And we're going to close with a segment of...
Well, I have a, I have a short thing I want to read.
Okay.
This was hanging up on my wall when I was a teenager, and it's anonymous, an anonymous poem. Everybody, somebody, anybody, and nobody. Have you heard of them? This is a little story about four people named Everybody, Somebody, Anybody, and Nobody. There was an important job to be done, and everybody was sure that somebody would do it. Anybody could have done it, but nobody did it. Somebody got angry about that because it was everybody's job. Everybody thought that anybody could do it, but nobody realized that everybody wouldn't do it. It ended up that everybody blamed somebody when nobody did what anybody could have done. Peace of love.
Let's get lit.
Thanks for listening to this podcast on the WDKX Podcast Network.
Provided by Vision Automotive.